Hi everyone, yet another week and there's just lots of stuff. There's always lots of stuff. There's only actually one blog post this week, but yeah, lots of stuff. So let me jump into the stuff, and this is in sort of no particular order. If you are in Australia and particularly in Sydney, I will be in Sydney next week talking at the McAfee Empower event. So that's going to be yet another local conference. It's nice to have lots of these little sort of local ones. I mean, they're not all little, but the travel is little, which is the nice thing. So that's nice and convenient. So I'm going to do that. In a couple of weeks' time, I'm heading out to a very regional area of Australia to do another Hack Yourself First workshop. It's a private one. I'm not going to say who it is because I'm just never quite sure if the organization wants to share that or not. They usually do, but hey, it's security. Sometimes companies can be a little bit secretive about these things. So anyway, I'm sure I'll be able to at least share the location when I'm up there in a couple of weeks. Now, the fact I've said up there, there's not a lot of places that are actually up there from where I am. And it's not Brisbane either, for the local Aussies or those who understand the geography here. So that'll be cool. Now, there's that. And that's going to be, like I say, it's actually a little regional centre in Australia. There is a thing which I can't talk about yet. At the end of the month, a very, very long way away, which is totally awesome. Like, it's epic. When I tell you this, when I can tell you, and I'll be able to tell you, I think in about 2 weeks from now, maybe just under, when I do tell you, you will not believe it. And I couldn't believe it. It's insane. But you'll see it, and I'll be on a big aeroplane, multiple aeroplanes, in a strange place, doing something that you never expected. So I'm going to come back to that, and I just want to leave these little bits hanging there for the next couple of weeks because it's actually super, super cool. So there'll be that. When I get back to Australia, I will have a couple of other talks as well. I've got a talk in Melbourne and a talk in Sydney coming up. Those ones I don't believe are going to be open to the public. I'll share what I can if I can actually talk about them. So they're all coming up. So that's like four trips. Hang on. Five trips in my immediate horizon, four of them in Oz. And then when I get through the next year, I've already sort of started to work a bunch of stuff out there. So I'm going to be back in London in January for NDC, and I'll be in Oslo for another NDC security thing as well, actually. And then there's going to be the MVP Summit in Seattle. There's going to be an EpiServer event in Vegas straight after that. Month after that, going to be in Hawaii for an event, because you can't say no when someone says, do you want to go to Hawaii for an event? So that's starting to look very busy. What I am trying to do differently to many of my other previous trips is I'm trying to sort of reduce the time. So these are not going to be like epic 3, 4, 6 week trips. These are usually sort of a week or 2 weeks or something. And I'm hoping that kind of helps me keep my sanity a bit. And plus keeps me at home because, hey, we're nearly in summer and it's kind of nice. So all those things are coming up. Now, in terms of other things that's been going on, I thought I'd give you just a couple of updates. And the first one is around Report URI. So last week, I announced that I'd joined Report URI. I'd invested in it in a monetary sense, as well as also investing in it with a heap of my time. And at the moment, I'm spending probably about an hour a day on the phone to Scott Helm, the original founder of the project, talking about how progress is going. Now, incidentally, this is a funny thing, and if Scott watches this, he'll laugh as well. Every single time we try and talk to each other over any VoIP communication platform, doesn't matter whether it is like Skype, Messenger, I don't know if we tried Telegram and Signal and all these sorts of things, but no matter what the platform is, something goes wrong and VoIP just doesn't work. Why is VoIP so hard? It's like it's either the device you want isn't working, and you can't answer it on the phone, you've got to answer it on the PC, or the headset doesn't work, or it drops out. Now, part of it is that our internet connectivity, yes, is absolute shit, and I'm sure that's part of it. I had to get out of the pool this morning when I was talking to Scott because it no longer worked. First world problems, right? But there is a certain irony to just how hard it is to actually get a VoIP call to consistently work. Be that as it may, we've been speaking a lot, particularly in these early days, because we really only launched V2 last week. And it's been really interesting to watch how quickly this thing has grown. So within 1 week of launching V2, we logged more than a billion reports. So this is a billion predominantly CSP reports from organizations rolling it out and then inevitably having a whole bunch of their users end up having their browser's log reports. So this could be anything from they've got a malformed CSP, so they've said, hey, you can only load content from, say, these three places, but then their web app tries to load it from somewhere else and it gets blocked because it's not in their whitelist. Obviously, there are many cases where it could actually be malice as well. So that could be someone maliciously attempting to exploit an XSS flaw. That'll log a report. Browser plugins are really, really noisy as well. So you tend to find browser plugins making requests to other resources or trying to embed things from other places that you didn't expect. That causes reports. We've identified one of the ones that was interesting is a particular plugin, and I won't name it because I'm not quite sure where that sits in terms of their comfort levels, but a plugin which does appear to have been used for doing things like crypto coin mining. So yeah, this plugin would run in the browser and then it would use all your CPU cycles to mine crypto. We're seeing that actually pop up in CSP reports because it makes external requests to resources, and the indicator of compromise, if you like, is something that we can match back to this particular crypto coin miner. So that's actually a really interesting insight that's coming out. We peaked over the last week, and look at my notes here, we peaked at 460,000 reports a minute, which is massive. And we're seeing these figures via Cloudflare. So Cloudflare sits in front of everything. And interestingly on that, people have sort of said when I've shared the graphs, they've said your caching level on Cloudflare is basically zero. Like if you look at Have I Been Pwned, you'll see it's something like, I don't know, 80% of requests get cached, because all of the images and CSS and everything can be loaded from the edge, and then 20% go through to the origin because they're API calls. Report URI, the overwhelming majority of traffic is people logging reports. So it's browsers literally going, hey, I'm going to send a report to Report URI. That can't be cached. It has to go all the way to the origin. And we then pick that up and process it. And incidentally, and Scott's going to write more about the architecture behind all this, but it is PHP running on DigitalOcean. It's got some nifty little Redis things happening behind it in order to cache a bunch of reports. And then the reports themselves actually go into Azure Table Storage. And for those of you who may have been following, Azure Table Storage is the same data construct that I use for Have I Been Pwned, where I've got the 4.8 billion records sitting there in the one table. Which, now that I think about it, is only like less than a week worth of report URI data. So that sort of puts things in perspective. But anyway, it is Azure sitting behind what is otherwise a LAMP stack out in front, which I think is kind of cool because, and this is an architecture Scott had some years ago, it kind of takes the best of each stack. I mean, the table storage is just fantastic for super cheap, super fast writes, very, very cost effective, scales infinitely. It does that really well. What he's done with Redis works fantastically. That Cloudflare bit is awesome. We're now going to start using Cloudflare more to try and control the flow of traffic as it comes in as well. And certainly one of the things that I've been very concerned about is that, well, I shouldn't say very concerned, one of the things I've been conscious of is that if you get like one malformed content security policy on a large site, you can really easily organically DDoS yourself. Because think about what it means. What can happen is on one page load, if you have, let's say, 10 different things which cause a CSP violation, you'll actually get 10 different reports. These don't get bundled. So you could go to a site, when let's say it's a big site, it's like a big news site or something, they've got a malformed CSP report. In the background, your browser makes 10 requests. And then you're one of like 10 million people that come to that site in the one day. And we go, okay, well now suddenly like there's 100 million requests, you know, bang. And we've got to be really conscious that this is something that can happen very, very easily. So one of the reasons we're using Cloudflare, for the folks that have asked, is it gives us a lot of control at the edge and in terms of how the traffic flows. And what I mean by that is that it sits in front of the infrastructure. So if we didn't have that sitting there, our infrastructure would have to handle the gazillions of requests that could happen from a malformed CSP. And even though we might do something like return 403 or something like that, we've still got to receive and handle the request. So a model like Cloudflare, where it sits in front of the infrastructure and at that level, we have the ability at any time to nuke a subscriber's subdomain, because all the reports are submitted to unique subdomains. At any time, we can go, these guys have kind of gone a bit overboard, nix it, and we can release all of that load from the origin server. So anyway, that's really cool. Report Your ROI's powering along there. We set it up to give 2 weeks worth of totally unbridled free access. We're just over the halfway point there. So we are actually seeing people sign up and pay money, which is important because the thing has to make money in order to pay for itself to keep running and in order to pay for the people that are doing the work on it as well. So that's kind of important. So I would really love people to jump in there and use it as much as they can. You can use it for free. You can log 10,000 reports a month, which may be more than you need. It also may be something that you burn through literally in a matter of seconds, depending on the nature of your site. So anyway, give that a go. That's running really, really well. On other projects that I'm involved in, I obviously still do the Have I Been Pwned thing. And I have just finished loading the last of what was 7 separate data breaches that all came through in this one bundle. So if you recall, there was Reverb Nation, there was Bitly, there was Kickstarter. All 3 of those had previously disclosed incidents, but we hadn't seen data, and then they turned up in this bundle of 7. There was Disqus. Disqus never knew that they had a breach. And I had to contact them and say, look, I kind of got like 17 million records of your users' data, including my data. This is probably something you want to look at. So Disqus was in there as well. And then there are a few others. So I'm trying to think of the chronology here. So last week there was Cafe Mom, which was a very sort of mother-centric service. Actually, no, that was today. So this is how many there are. Last week it was We Heart It, which is a little bit like a Pinterest imagery sort of thing. Today was Cafe Mom. So Cafe Mom had 2 million something records in it. Plain text passwords were in there. And then the last one that I just loaded, 11 million records, was a combination of Coupon Mom. There's a bit of a mom theme going throughout here, and Armor Games. And I want to explain this one because this was a really weird one. And basically out of this stash of 7, so remember the whole 7 thing with the Bitly and the Kickstarter and everything, out of this stash of 7, 6 of them I could really easily verify. And I've written before about how I verify data breaches, which is predominantly go to the password reset page, take one of the Mailinator addresses in the breach, put that into password reset. If it comes back and says it's been reset, as opposed to if it comes back and says it hasn't been reset because it doesn't exist, because just about every site has an enumeration risk, then that's good. Good in terms of me verifying. And even if there's not an enumeration risk, it's a Mailinator account. So you can go and check the Mailinator inbox. And of course, I check the Mailinator accounts because nobody ever signs up with a Mailinator address with an expectation of keeping it private. They're public by design. So the first 6 were like really easy to go, yeah, they're legit. The last one, this Coupon Mom / Armor Games one, was hard. And it was hard for a number of different reasons. And one of the reasons is that when I went to the Coupon Mom site, there was no obvious enumeration risk. Which makes things tricky, and it's a very odd thing. And before I say this, let's just be clear about the demographic, because this is going to sound really bad when you hear it. So the demographic for Coupon Mom, a lot of moms here, is moms that want to save money using coupons. So, you know, this is like you get a fraction off your food or whatever it may be. So it's probably not a particularly tech-savvy audience. And that the lady who runs it, the Coupon Mom, I take it, is also not particularly tech savvy, but obviously she's built up a brand and a reputation on this thing. So the way it seems like you don't actually log in using a username and password. You log in using just an email address. And it seems like you enter that, and then it's like you're automatically logged in. And the long and the short of it was there was no obvious kind of enumeration vector like the password reset I just spoke about. So that made it hard. And what I did is I went out to Have I Been Pwned subscribers, as I often do, and I said, okay, look, you 30 people, you're the 30 who most recently subscribed to the service and you're in this alleged Coupon Mom data. What can you tell me about it? And this was another case where it's email addresses and plain text passwords. And what was happening is people coming back and saying, many of them were saying, and I want to caveat this carefully, many of them were saying, I have not heard of Coupon Mom before. A few of them had. Many of them were saying they had not heard of it before, but their data was legit. And by data being legit, what they're saying is, yeah, that's a password I've used before because they recognized it. So this is just part of my verification process. But there was one guy at one point who made a really interesting comment where I think what he said was, this was the password I used for Arma Games. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's a very specific recollection. And when I started looking through the data, I started seeing loads of references for Arma Games. So like once you know what to look for, you start to see patterns. So I'd already looked for Coupon Mom, and there were lots of Coupon Mom references throughout the data. A lot of coupon references as well, which was a little bit less specific than Coupon Mom. Anyway, there's a bunch of Arma game stuff there as well. We're seeing Arma games represented in email addresses, Arma games represented in passwords. Long and short of it is, I end up going both to the Coupon Mom herself and also to Arma games and providing them both the data that I'd been sent and said, look, this is allegedly from you, Coupon Mom. This looks like it's from you, Arma games. What can you tell me? Now, without sort of going into the specifics of what was ultimately private discussions, on the Coupon Mom side of things, they couldn't immediately see any way that this could tie back. She actually made the point that they don't collect passwords because you just sign in with your email address. So that was kind of a little bit weird. But then it was in this bundle of seven incidents where six of them had been legit and really, really serious. So my confidence level was higher. And some people had said they did sign up to Coupon Mom. And then on the Arma Games side of thing, we had the guys saying originally that I don't think they could see a lot of a match, but then just today before I loaded the data, they said, yeah, look, we've found that some of these do actually match. And Arma Games, looks like they've had one or two incidents in the past as well. So the bottom line was, I got to the point where I went, people are saying this is legitimate data. This is passwords that they have used before. These have lots of indicators of coming from these sites, but they didn't obviously all come from one site because we've got a lot of stuff that says Coupon Mom and a lot of stuff that says Arma Games. I loaded the whole lot, 11 million records, called it Coupon Mom / Arma Games, and I flagged it as unverified, which effectively means, look, it's got a lot of legit data in there, but I can't emphatically tie it back to one individual place. And then I found almost 32,000 subscribers in there. So almost 32,000 Have I Been Pwned subscribers got emails just from that one incident today, which is actually a very high number. And a final note on that, and the whole sort of seven breach thing, the person that sent me to that, who said, look, they have received it from other people, also pinged me just this morning and said, look, that there are other incidents of many tens of millions of records that we haven't seen before. And when you think about things like Discuss Coupon, well, not maybe not Coupon Mom, but Discuss We Heart at Cafe Mom, these things that were millions of records were legit and no one knew about them, it kind of again raises my confidence level in terms of how convinced I am that this person's going to have more very, very large legit data breaches that we're yet to see disclosed publicly. So I may be having some other interesting chats coming up. Just on that note as well, I'm trying to write something up around some of the rigmarole I have to go through in order to get in touch with companies and advise them on data breaches. And I'm going to let a little bit of time pass because I don't want to sort of throw any of these organizations under the bus after they've already had a rough time of it. But holy shit, like it is so hard in many cases, most cases even, to get in touch with an organization and to get them to deal with this data responsibly. I posted a blog post I'm going to talk about in a moment yesterday, which was related to sites that had been compromised and they had malicious pages on them. And someone sort of said, oh, well, have you contacted the sites? Like, you know, it's just a normal thing to go and contact organizations that have had a compromise and let them know. And I kind of went, mate, do you know how hard it is trying to disclose even really serious data breaches? You know, Discuss was an absolutely exemplary example of doing it right, but so many others, there are ones I'll talk about where it's taken weeks after millions of plain text passwords and email addresses for them to actually disclose. There are others where they've been very standoffish because they think it's a shakedown or something like that. And look, I understand why they might feel that way. There have been other ones where they just simply won't reply at all. It's just, it is so freaking hard to responsibly disclose data breaches. And I honestly very, very frequently dread that process. So I'll talk about that another time. All right, let me move on a little bit. I want to talk about the ThinkPad competition because I started this ThinkPad competition. I put it out, when was it, 2 weeks ago, and said, look, Lenovo has said you can give someone a ThinkPad. You can decide how you want to give it to them. And I went, okay, well, let's make people actually do something useful. So I stood up this competition about who could use the Have I Been Pwned API to do something awesome. And that the sort of caveats were, okay, you're going to have 2 weeks to do it. I think it was 2 weeks. And at the end of 2 weeks, I'm going to choose what I think are the best four implementations on top of the Have I Been Pwned API. And then I'm going to put it in a Twitter poll. And I put out this poll just under an hour ago, just before I started this video. And I thought I'll tell you some of the things people have done because there's some really super awesome stuff here. And before I tell you these four, there's other stuff, the sort of fifth, sixth, seventh, etc., which are also super awesome. I actually had descriptions of other projects which were going to be my top four. And then I read down the list and I went, that one is actually really, like this other one was good. That one's actually really, really good. So there's a heap of cool stuff, but here's the top four. So we got this bloke, Felix Giffard. He has created passwordsecurity.info. So he's got a website here where he augments my pwned. People keep asking me, how do you say it? And sometimes I don't even know myself. Pwned passwords. Just on that as well, I have heard French TV say pwned, have I been pwned? And I've heard an American news outlet say, have I been prawned? So I actually had to go and register haveibeenprawned.com just in case. Check it out, serious. Okay, so he's used pwned passwords. So these are the passwords that have appeared in previous data breaches. And he's combined that with a strength indicator as well. And what I like about this is that strength indicators themselves concern me. I've written about this before. I link to it in my explanation of his project as well. They worry me because they're usually just based on mathematics, you know, uppercase, lowercase, length. And it just totally neglects the social aspect of passwords. So I like that he's combined both these together. He's open sourced it all. You can get this. You can put it in your project. Awesome stuff. We've got another guy here, Ben Cooper. So Ben has created a Slack bot. There are actually a couple of Slack bot entries. But what I like about Ben's is he's sort of integrated it together very nicely where you can use it to check the email addresses of everyone within a particular Slack organization and then send them a DM if they're found in a breach. And he's also bundled it all up very nicely in GitHub. All of this stuff here, by the way, has GitHub repos. It's all public, which is great. And made it really easy to deploy to Heroku as well. So that's really cool. He's made that very easily accessible. We've got Alberto DiMarco, who has created a Gmail checker. Now, when I first saw this, and I didn't say this in the text here because it's a little bit easier just to explain on the video. When I first saw it, I was like, just a little bit of me felt a little bit uncomfortable because what he's done is he's created an app where you give it permissions to your Gmail. It can then go into your Gmail. It can find all the people you're communicated with and then check them in Have I Been Pwned? And that little bit of me that felt a bit uncomfortable was, first of all, you're giving an app access to read your Gmail, but you know, then again, that's not unprecedented. There are lots of apps that do this. There are security controls around it, and it's open source as well. So we can sort of overcome that. And then the other bit was, you're checking other people's accounts. And I've kind of made a comment here a little bit further down in the sort of explanation of these top four. I've said, look, just always be conscious that I've had to make this call about making the thing publicly searchable. You know, and I wrote a blog post a little while ago about the ethics of running a data breach service, where I talked about the fact that it's publicly searchable so people could find other people there and do some kind of bad stuff. However, it's publicly searchable, which makes it really easily accessible and then makes the awareness and all this sort of thing very, very good. So there's a big upside to it as well. And I was just a little bit conscious that with Alberto's implementation, you're going through checking a whole bunch of other people that may have no expectation of it. However, that also creates a great opportunity. And it's a great opportunity insofar as for most people out there, they're going to have a bunch of folks in their address book that have never thought about data breaches. They're still using the same shit password everywhere and they have no 2FA and all this sort of stuff. And if this is the thing that allows people that want to use this project that he's created to get in touch with all these other people and say, hey, did you know you're in the Dropbox data breach, one of the MOM data breaches from just today? That is really great exposure-wise. And Alberto then talks in his GitHub description on the GitHub page, he talks about some of the experiences of where he's been able to find people, let them know, and the light bulbs have gone on, and now they're aware of data breaches, and they've taken steps to protect themselves. And that's a good outcome. So I guess in summary on his particular project, there are ways of using this in a very positive manner. And what his project does, it's not like it sort of auto-emails everyone. It says, okay, here are the people and here's who's been impacted. Now you decide how you're going to communicate with them. Now the last one, and this is the one that I least saw coming, is a guy here called Stephen Harrison. And he has written one, you know what, I don't think I'd even say written. He has made one called PwnShy. Now the reason I say made is he has 3D printed stuff. So I actually saw him tweet this at some point during the competition. And I was like, wonder what he's doing with a 3D printer, 3D printing something that says, have I been pwned? And he's taken an implementation of a game called Coconut Shy, where apparently you knock down pawns or something like that. And what he's done, you got to go and look at it, look at the video, because he's in a video of it. What he's done is he's set it all up so that, let's say there's a conference, you get the normal RFID tag on your badge. You walk past his device, you scan your RFID tag on the device, it gets your email off the RFID, sends that into this little unit he's created to the Have I Been Pwned API, gets a response, and then things on the top light up and change colors and things. Video looks really, really awesome. So go and check out Stephen Harrison's PwnShy as well. He's kind of cool. Now, what I like about every one of these projects, and in fact, the reason why I chose these four over many others that were very good, is that each one of them does something very positive in terms of raising the awareness of data breaches. There are other things in there that were very good that would only be of use to you. And do go and check them out because you may find them very useful. But these four in particular helped educate other people. And they helped others become aware of the fact that there is this thing, again, called a data breach, and that they really need to take the steps that you and I know, but so many other people don't. So if nothing else, go and check out certainly the top four in terms of how to increase awareness and exposure to people and the ones beneath there as well. Now, incidentally, there are 90 votes at the moment, less than an hour in, and there is no one project with less than 19% of the votes. Now, I'm not going to say who's leading it at the moment, who's not, because I don't want to sort of preempt who's going to win or, you know, anything like that. But the two leading ones are 30% and 29%. So very, very close. I was a little bit worried that there'd be one that was just like massively popular or one that was just massively unpopular, but that's not the case at all. So we've in fact, now they're dead on, just refreshed. So we've got two that are at 29%, one at 23%, one at 19%. So that's awesome. I'm really happy to see that. And I'll keep plugging it. It's a little bit out of normal waking hours at the moment for the rest of the world because Australia's kind of opposite. But keep an eye on that. All right, so that's that one. Now, I did write something new just yesterday, which was around the one valuable thing that all websites have being reputation. And this was one of these blog posts where it just been sitting there in draft for ages, and I just kept adding little bits to it. And what I was actually adding is every time I got an email that came through all the way into my inbox, so it went like around the Outlook.com spam filters and made it to the inbox, which occasionally it's going to do, I would have a look at it, and so long as I wasn't clicking on a bit.ly link, bump the camera. So long as I wasn't clicking on a bit.ly link or something like that, which was going to send my personal information away or rather confirm that I had received the email, I'd go and have a look at it. And it was just interesting to see phishing emails that got through to my inbox. So, you know, that's the first thing. Being able to do that is a bonus for the phisher, not so much a bonus for us. And the other thing that was kind of interesting is that a bunch of these were phishing pages hosted on otherwise legitimate websites doing other things. And this was really the context that started forming in my mind, which is the value of any website to attackers is that it has a non-negative reputation. So, you know, I've got some examples in here. There's things like There's a bloke from Kashmir who has got a blog about daffodils. Yep. And that blog has a fishing page on it. Right, had a fishing page on it. I'll explain why it's a had in a moment. And, you know, like it's a bloke from Kashmir with daffodils. Now, daffodil bloke is probably thinking and telling his mates, look, I've got nothing of value on my site. And this is what I hear all the time, and you probably hear this a lot. You hear people go, I don't have to worry too much about security. We don't have passwords or payment records or any personal info. Why does it really matter? Well, because Daffodil Bloke here has just got a normal standalone blog. I think it's running on WordPress, so maybe he's got like a dodgy WordPress plugin somewhere as well. That has been attractive to an attacker because the attacker can get their phishing page on there, and then when they send the emails out to everyone, the emails are less likely to be blocked by the likes of Outlook.com because it hasn't yet been identified as a phishing page. Chrome is yet to identify it as a phishing page. My ISP or my VPN provider are yet to identify it as a phishing page. And it gets through all of these filters because they haven't yet learned about the malicious nature of the site. And further down the page, I actually give examples where I say, look, here is what Freedom VPN, Telstra, my ISP, Outlook Safe Links. So Outlook now sort of redirects you through this little safe link checker. We're going to make sure the link's okay before you go there. And of course, Chrome's anti-phishing stuff. All of these things, once a site is known to be bad, block the traffic immediately. And this is what's happened to Daffodil Mate now. So you can't go and look at the daffodils anymore, because if you go there in Chrome, it's like a massive red screen, which is like, look out, malicious site ahead. So I just thought that was interesting in terms of the value posed by any website. And I hope that becomes a useful reference for people when someone tells them, I don't really have anything of value. Yeah, you do. You're not known to be bad. All right, so that's that one. The very last thing today is Gold Security sponsoring me again. So big thanks to those guys. Gold Security has been around on my blog for quite some time now. So their ongoing support is really awesome. I'm still booked out until Christmas, which is actually not that far away now that I start to think about it. So I should get organized actually and find some other sponsors. I've got a couple coming up that are very different to the things that you have seen there before. And I'm really grateful that there is a bit of variety coming. So there'll be names that you probably don't know doing things that are very, very different to what you've seen before. And if anyone else is out there and they do want to jump on board, particularly from Christmas onwards, then let me know. So that is pretty much everything for today. So I'm going to sign off from here. I will be back home again next week. I've only got to go down to Sydney for Monday, Tuesday for the McAfee Empower event. And again, if you're down that way, love you to come along and watch my talk. And I'll see you next week. Bye, guys.